This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, 7:06 a.m. on Monday, the 20th of March. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Philip C. In half an hour, we're going to discuss the winners and losers of the UK's spring budget that was tabled last week. But as always, we're going to kickstart the week and the morning with a look at how global markets closed last Friday.
We'll start with ZIG because the US markets closed last week down. The Dow is down 1.2%, the S&P 500 down 1.1%, the NASDAQ down 0.7%. And then we move to ZAG, which is over at Asia, where all the markets were up green. The Nikkei was up 1.2%, Hang Seng up 1.6%, Shanghai Composite up 0.7%, Singapore's STI up 0.9%, and back home, FBM KLCI was up 1.5%.
So it's really a study of contrasts there, right?
It is.
Green in Asian markets. It's red over in the U.S. But for some analysis on where markets could be heading this week, we have on the line with us Stephen Innes, Managing Partner of SPI Asset Management. Stephen, good morning. Now, we woke up to news about UBS buying Credit Suisse for $3.3 billion. Do you think this will bring an end to negative sentiment when markets reopen today?
You know, I think it's a very good question. You know, while most folks, normal folks, that is, were were weekending, market enthusiasts basically took to Twitter to express their merger and acquisitions opinions on the book closing on the storied Credit Suisse after a 167-year run. Now, while the outcome here is being viewed universally good out of a lot of really bad outcomes that could have happened, I think this is okay for the time being. But, you know, where do we go from here is a really, really interesting question, because when we looked at the bank run and the dash for cash we saw in the U.S. market last week, it was very, very shocking. I think investors really, really took a negative opinion of lots of U.S. banks knocking on the Fed window, borrowing money to try to shore up their balance sheets. We don't know whether this was due to an actual shortage system-wide, or whether this was just an idiosyncratic event because several banks had to shore up their balance sheet. Nonetheless, the market's going to continue, in my view, be looking at issues within the banking system. That said, however, for a great degree, the market in the U.S. had very much treated the recent events as a surgical strike on a specific cohort of stocks. They're very much compartmentalized the issue to the banking sector. Mm-hmm. Fed response has been a dovish shock. That's temporarily calmed markets a bit. You look at the equities markets, they're not really selling off too much. However, the big problem, here's my point right now, is the bond market. The volatility in the bond market is just unprecedented. And that's where the bulk of the issues are sitting right now, in my view.
Now, I want to just get your perspective on whether there's any implications on Asian banks, because so far what we've heard is that there's actually going to be very little impact on Asian banks, if any, because of the systemic risk. Do you agree with this assertion that the impact on Asian banks is somewhat limited?
Well, it really depends on how intense the global financial shock happens and how intense demand for dollars gets. If we do have a run on the banks, I don't see how any bank globally will be immune to a shock in the U.S. markets. Now, as we got back to the point again, this seems to be right now isolated to a number of regional banks. But as we move from this being a bank shock to perhaps a growth shock, that's where the issues start to come in here. Now, what I mean by a growth shock, you have to consider that U.S. regional banks are the dominant lender in the U.S. markets to not only consumers, but to small businesses and agricultural concerns. So if they stop lending to any great degree, that's really, really going to slow the economy. Now, we don't know how much it's going to slow the economy. So it's a wait and see kind of attitude here. But we know that if the U.S. economy slows down dramatically, it's going to affect a lot of Asia exporters. And that's going to be one of the concerns we're going to look at. So perhaps there may not be a direct negative effect into the banking system, but there could be an economic effect that would weigh into the system.
So taking into account this all the potential scenarios, Stephen, where do you think the Fed will go when it meets this week at the FOMC? Are they going to, how much are they going to raise rates by? Will they maybe stay pat? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, it would be a shocker if they pulled an ECB and hiked 50 basis points, you know, given how counterproductive that would be after lavishing the market with effectively QE last week. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the issue right now. I think there's a good chance that they raise 25 basis points just to say, hey, you know, we're still looking at inflation because it's still running pretty hot. But their forward guidance is going to be tinged probably hawkish in the sense that they're going to say, look, we're providing a temporary measures right now to see how the market reacts, to see how we can quickly they put this current U.S. banking malaise on the back burner. Now, if that thing gets put on the back burner relatively quickly, I think we'll start to see the Fed hike again. But obviously, the hiking pace will be nowhere near the velocity and the quantum that was priced in prior to this event happening. So ultimately, I think the peak of Fed funds has dropped 100 basis point in pricing. That may be it. We may only see one or two hikes for the rest of the year because the central bank doesn't want to over-tighten the market and cause more ruckus within bank concerns. Remember, the big concern here is that banks have borrowed have lent longer terms to perhaps in the 10-year area where yields are quite low, and unfortunately have to fund those positions with overnight money where it's more expensive. So there's a mismatch between borrowing costs and lending costs, and that's where the banks are running into trouble right now.
And Stephen, you mentioned just now about inflation. I wonder now, with all these moving elements in, what is the picture like for inflation in the coming months ahead? Because we saw recent data coming out, right? It's really running hotter than expected. So, you know, is the Fed and central banks all across Asia also rethinking the formula and calculations in factoring inflation in their calculations?
Well, they are factoring inflation in the calculations, but they're also factoring in the sense that, you know, reduction in credit to the markets, also tightening of financial conditions. So, you know, this is good in the sense, well, the silver lining here is that this tightening of financial conditions could hold the Fed back a little bit. Ultimately, these tightening of financial conditions could basically drive the U.S. economy into a recession. Remember, if we get back to the issue at hand, is that the Fed allowed the U.S. economy to run hot after unprecedented amounts of stimulus was put in the economy. And also when they tried to concoct an average inflation target while they were continuing to run interest rates low, this is coming back to haunt. And this is the problem right now. That initial policy mistake by allowing inflation to run too hot, acknowledging that it was transitory. So this is what's coming back to haunt right now. Obviously, the rapid rate hike to stem inflation is causing all the problems we're having right now. Hmm. But ultimately, you know, if the financial system tightens because of this banking shock, where banks are less, you know, cozy to start lending again, well, that's going to tighten the market. Therefore, the Fed doesn't have to hike as aggressively.
What about in the rest of the world, Stephen, particularly within Asia? Because we are seeing Asian central banks cooling on the idea of further rate rises. We've seen Bank Negara, for example, just putting a pause on any interest rate hikes for now. Are inflationary concerns not so serious in this region, or is there another dynamic at work?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Asia hasn't felt it yet, the inflation cycle, to the same degree that what the Western economy did, whether this is a result of idiosyncratic spending habits in Asia, where, you know, let's face it, the Chinese consumers tend to be more savers than they are spenders. But, you know, when they decide to spend, boy, they really spend. So we have to keep our eye on that. But I think because of the low inflation, if we look at what the PBOC did, for instance, last week, they cut the RRR rate. Mm. And that's really to, in my view, not really as a pro-growth stance, but perhaps it's a move, as you correctly alluded to here, is to a little extra generous on liquidity to manage sentiment. amid significant banking stress over here overseas. BNM, I'm not sure what they're going to do. They did hint in the policy statement that they will keep an eye on the growth situation because of the pro-growth stance within the budget. Now, my view here is that I think the BNM could raise interest rates given the fact that the ringgit suffered a colossal beatdown in February. But again, this view is really predicated on a number of dynamics working, i.e. high growth and the ringgit staying weak. That may lead the BNM to hike rates another 25 basis points. But that's just an outside view that I have right now.
Stephen, thanks very much for joining us this morning. That was Stephen Innes, Managing Partner at SPI Asset Management, helping us understand what's moving markets, so what happened over the weekend, and what we should be looking at, I guess, in the days and weeks ahead.
I really like his perspective there with respect to the impact on us as an economy. I think he's saying, look, the banks don't affect the banks, but the bank affects the economy in the US, which then has trickle-down effects to our economy here. So it's a roundabout way as opposed to a bank crunch hitting our bank system. Yeah.
That's right. It's a good way to think about how this is. It's all, we're kind of in a loop.
Interconnected, really.
Exactly. Let's get a little bit into, I suppose, the UBS and Credit Suisse merger, takeover, buyover, however you want to say it. This was something that they had been working on over the weekend. It's funny because on Friday, we were seeing headlines about how both sides were a bit reluctant about it. But then come Sunday evening, come Monday morning, it's in the bank. They are going to come together and it will be at a quite steep discount for Credit Suisse.
That's right. The Swiss bank is only paying 3 billion francs for its rival to an all-share deal that includes extensive government guarantees and liquidity provisions. Now, the price per share marked a 99% decline from Credit Suisse's peak price in 2007. Now, the Swiss National Bank, the country's central bank, is offering about 100 billion franc liquidity assistance to UBS, while the government is granting a 9 billion franc guarantee for potential losses from assets to take over. Now, chairman of UBS has clearly said that the investment banking business of Credit Suisse will be downscaled.
It's the end of an era, somewhat, in a
it
way.
It is a 160-year-old business set up to actually fund the expansion of Swiss mountain railways.
7:18 in the morning. We are heading into some messages. We'll continue covering the top stories in the newspapers and portals this morning. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.